You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending February 19th, and it's podcast number 75. I'm Joe Elia. Earlier podcasts and links are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. Dr. George Bakris is our conversational partner today. He's the first author on the accomplished trial report just issued online by The Lancet. In it, international investigators seek to measure the effects of two drug regimens on the progression of chronic kidney disease in patients with hypertension. Before that, let's talk about the week's other medical news. The FDA is warning against the sole use of long-acting beta agonists in asthma. The drugs, which include the single-agent agonists Seravent and Foradil, have been linked with severe worsening of symptoms in some cases, and the FDA is having the drug companies change their labels to reflect the danger. One of the recommendations is that children and adolescents should never be prescribed the single-agent versions, but should instead be given Advair or Symbicort, which include inhaled corticosteroids. Those combo drugs themselves will also carry the warnings. Next, patients who substitute pipes or cigars in lieu of cigarettes are also headed toward impaired lung function. An analysis of some 3,500 middle-aged and older subjects finds that even those smokers who did not smoke cigarettes were at twice the risk for COPD. The message? There is no safe dose of tobacco smoke. Next, diabetics taking some formulations of metformin may be put off by its fishy aroma, according to a letter in the Annals of Internal Medicine. One way to restore compliance and eliminate the odor is to prescribe an extended-release formulation, which places a thin film coating between the aroma and the patient's nose. Finally, for those of you who love or require statistics about medicine, the CDC has put out its annual compendium of health stats on the U.S. The new edition is called Health United States 2009, and it runs almost 600 pages. Just the thing to settle arguments around the dinner or a conference table. All right, that's it for the news. Let's go on to the interview. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. The Lancet this week published online a secondary analysis of the accomplished trial. The trial previously showed that patients with hypertension had less risk of cardiovascular events when given the combination of the ACE inhibitor benazepril plus the calcium channel blocker amlodipine, than when given benazepril plus the diuretic hydrochlorothiazide. The secondary analysis just published examines the effects of the two regimens on progression of chronic kidney disease. Briefly, benazepril plus amlodipine was associated with a slower progression of chronic kidney disease than the benazepril hydrochlorothiazide regimen. The study was stopped after about 3 years when the effect became apparent. However, questions still remain. Dr. George Bakris, the study's first author, is with us today. He's in the Hypertensive Diseases Unit of the Department of Medicine at the University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Medicine, where he is a professor of medicine. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Bakris.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask how big the difference in effect between the two regimens is.
Well, we looked at multiple endpoints. We looked at the traditional endpoints that have been looked at in all of the other kidney trials that have been done, and in fact, were the basis for labeling by the Food and Drug Administration. So those points are, number one, doubling of serum creatinine, progression or need for dialysis, and a reduction in glomerular filtration rate, that is eGFR, of less than 15 mLs per minute. And that's an endpoint related to dialysis, since most people need dialysis when they get below 15, but not always. But below 10, everybody does. So that triple combination was the endpoint. If you look at the separation between the two, it was clear that the number of people that doubled their creatinine in the group on benazepril hydrochlorothiazide was far greater than the group receiving amlodipine. And of particular interest is if you look at the group over age 65, and the mean age of starting dialysis now is 69, and so This is a particularly sensitive group, and in that group, there was a not only significant difference in the doubling of serum creatinine, but there was additionally a difference that just missed statistical significance for need for dialysis. And in fact, just to give you an idea, there were in the amlodipine benazepril group, 1.8% of people doubled their creatinine, and in the benazepril hydrochlorothiazide group, 3.6% doubled their creatinine. So twice as many people. That was in the trial overall. When you then look at the people over age 65, that was a similar proportion of doubling of creatinine. But when you look at dialysis, 0.08% required dialysis in the amlodipine benazepril group, and there was a 0.26% in the benazepril hydrochlorothiazide group. And just to translate that into a hazard ratio, if you were on amlodipine benazepril, your risk for needing dialysis was reduced by 70%.
Mm-hmm. But the number of people needing that were rather small.
Very small. And I would make the distinction that this trial was primarily a cardiovascular endpoint trial, but we recruited a lot of people that had very advanced kidney disease. The key to this trial versus the other trials that have been done with kidney disease as a primary endpoint was that we did not specifically look for people that had more than 300 milligrams of protein. In fact, the majority of the patients in this trial either had no albuminuria or microalbuminuria. And we now know that the magnitude of albuminuria is a determinant of how fast you're going to decline kidney function. So only a minority of these patients actually had significant amounts of proteinuria. So if you actually look at the proportion of people in this trial that had a significant amount of proteinuria, similar to what was seen in the hard point renal trials like ID&T and RENAL that have been published for labeling, it turns out only 18% of the entire group of people with kidney disease actually had that level of proteinuria, 167 people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the main reasons we didn't even have more drama. I think the way to think about the results in this trial is to say, if you have an older patient that clearly has high cardiovascular risk and also has kidney disease, that the outcome, not only from a cardiovascular standpoint, but from a kidney standpoint, is going to be better if you use the combination of amlodipine benazepril versus benazepril hydrochlorothiazide. And that's in keeping with the majority of the population. If you have higher amounts of protein in the urine, 1, 2, 3 grams, I don't think this trial answers that question as far as that advanced kidney disease. But I think for the majority of people, it does provide an answer that the other kidney trials didn't provide. And just for a clarification standpoint, this was not just a secondary analysis. This was a pre-specified endpoint that we designed into the trial when we started. So it does have a fairly reasonable statistical power to make these conclusions, and we noted that in the paper.
Right, and you in your title you do call it a pre-specified secondary analysis.
Right.
Right, okay. Why do you think that calcium channel blocker, amlodipine, works better than hydrochlorothiazide as a companion to benazepril?
Well, that's an excellent question, and the answer to that is a hypothesis that I'm going to put forth because I don't have a definitive answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
But when we designed this trial, the premise was based on animal studies showing that when you combined benazepril and amlodipine, you actually had regression of atherosclerosis, and you actually had an increase in nitric oxide. Now, nitric oxide is a gas that the cells put out and signal each other when certain stimuli come along, like angiotensin II and other things. And amlodipine is the only calcium blocker that tends to increase this. And it was shown in animal studies to cause improvement in vascular responses of the coronaries and of the kidney vessels. So we thought it would be interesting, given that they have similar effects on blood pressure, and in trials like the ALLHAT, the results we did not know at the time when we designed this, but certainly showed that at least for stroke benefit, it was every bit as good as a diuretic. So, you know, we thought it would be reasonable, especially since you're starting. This is the only trial that actually started with fixed-dose combinations. Most trials start with drug A or drug B and add therapy on. This actually started with both drugs at the same time and titrated both drugs at the same time.
And, you titrated down to target blood pressure levels.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So everybody got the opportunity, if needed, to go to the absolute top dose of each of those combinations. And then in the group that had more advanced kidney disease, if they needed a stronger diuretic for controlling their edema, we used furosemide in those cases.
I see.
So it's not like only hydrochlorothiazide was used.
Now, you had a greater blood pressure, I guess it was a median blood pressure level in the people taking hydrochlorothiazide, not by much clinically, but by a significant amount, right?
Well, yeah. Statistically, when you get this many people, even a 1 millimeter difference, if it's consistent, would be statistically significant. The argument is it clinically significant?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the overall and the actually the graphs of the time points of the blood pressure throughout the study are there. If you look at the time points, there's only a period in the very beginning of the trial, I would say the first, within the first year, where there was a 2 to 3 millimeter advantage over the group getting amlodipine benazepril. The remaining of the time, it's really pretty much on target. And so I would argue that while it's statistically significant, it's probably not clinically significant. And I say that because in the trials that have shown a clinically meaningful difference in blood pressure, it's usually consistent with a minimum of 3 and usually 4 to 5 millimeter difference throughout the trial. And that was clearly not the case here.
Now, calcium channel blockers, I'm not a clinician, I hasten to add, have a what's called a negative inotropic effect, which is that they lower the pressure of the left ventricular contraction. Is that right? They lower their force?
Some of the calcium channel blockers have that, yes.
Now, does amlodipine have that?
Amlodipine has a neutral effect.
I see. Okay.
On that. The calcium channel blockers that actually have a profound effect on that are the non-dihydropyridine, the verapamil, diltiazem type compounds.
Okay.
The subclass of compounds where amlodipine is in tend to have the least effect on negative inotropic effects.
Okay, so the editorialists, I'm sure you read the editorial with some interest.
Yes.
Your Dutch uncles.
Yeah. Yes.
It said that there is. They say there's more work to be done, and you say as much yourself that you would not. I guess if I'll put some words into your mouth. You would not change current guidelines for treatment of these patients until you've had a chance to confirm the observations that you made. Is that right?
Well, I think that's partially true.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would modify that in the following way. The arguments made, first let me comment on my Dutch uncles and actually good friends.
Yeah, okay.
That have written that editorial. The comments made in that editorial really are more concerning if this was going to be a short-term study.
Mm-hmm.
This was a six-month study, even a year study. Everything they said is very valid. But if you look at the data from long-term studies that have carefully looked at these changes in GFR that they're referring to, like the African-American study of kidney disease, which was published back in 2002, and I was proud to tell you that I was one of the authors of that paper, where we went out 5 years and specifically looked at this in the context of the calcium blockers. That effect that they're referring to is lost by 18 months. And in fact, at 3 years, there's none of that effect present. So it's really not valid, that the arguments they're making are really not valid for really long-term hard outcomes. They are valid if you're talking about short-term, or certainly valid if you're talking about changes in albuminuria or some surrogate or alleged surrogate for renal outcomes. Those are very valid points, but not for hard data, and especially not for the trend in dialysis that we saw. That really doesn't hold. So as far as changing guidelines, I will tell you that certain guidelines have already been modified around the world, and I think that is a bit premature, but I don't think it's premature to qualify the current guidelines in the following way, and that is that if you have high cardiovascular risk and evidence of kidney disease without proteinuria, that is microalbuminuria or no albuminuria, I would say that it would you'd be better off, based on the cardiovascular risk reduction at the very least, with starting with an ACE CCB, a benazepril amlodipine combination, versus a diuretic combination. If you have advanced kidney disease, well, I don't think the answer is clearly known there, but we do know from, again, post hoc analysis from the other trials that were powered for this kind of subgroup, that they did quite well with amlodipine added to an angiotensin receptor blocker. But guess what? They didn't do better than people on a diuretic with a angiotensin receptor blocker. So that distinction maybe fades away when you get into really advanced disease. But in this earlier stage, where there's not a lot of protein in the urine, it appears that you may be better off, if you, certainly from a survival standpoint, using amlodipine with benazepril.
Are you aware of any work that's underway, or do you have any underway yourself that would that's seeking to confirm these observations?
To my knowledge, there's nothing underway that is going to confirm this. There is, and we allude to this in the discussion in the paper, the whole background on mechanism, that if you summarize it, basically says that there's a synergistic vascular effect of amlodipine with benazepril. Diuretics, in a very nice paper that was published in the Journal of Hypertension in 2008, again in animal models, but a variety of animal models, showed absolutely nothing special at any cellular level that a diuretic does, but the ACE inhibitor certainly did have that benefit. So if you're looking at it in terms of synergy, you have two drugs working in a similar fashion in one group here, and you only have one drug working in that direction. Could that have accounted for the change? Maybe. I guess the point here is, even in the advanced kidney disease trial that used amlodipine in the absence of a benazepril-type drug, the benefit wasn't so clear on the kidney in those studies. But even in those studies, where amlodipine really didn't show a clear benefit on the kidney, there was a 40% reduction in heart attacks, even in that group. So there seems to be some type of synergistic effect going on that may relate to this basic science mechanism. It's unclear. I don't know of a study. We have suggested to certain companies that have these types of drugs to do this. Nobody wants to make that commitment, especially in this environment with Congress and Senate breathing down their necks. And the NIH is not in a position to do this. So, unfortunately, I don't think this will be confirmed, although we certainly would like it. We have discussed it.
Yeah, and it's an important question, isn't it? If you can prevent people from going into end-stage renal disease, even Congress would be happy to save that money.
Well, I would hope so. You never know.
So, meanwhile, clinicians have a decision to make about whether they're going to go with the guidelines that haven't changed or listen to your advice and parse out which patients of theirs might benefit from the calcium channel blocker plus the ACE inhibitor.
Let me see if I can give some guidance. with and I'll preface this by saying that I am an author of the JNC7, and I was on the committee that wrote the JNC6.
Well, now, I'm sorry, for the listeners who might not know what those are, me among them, what is JNC?
Okay, so this is the Joint National Committee Report. This is the NIH, kind of the government guidelines for managing blood pressure in a variety of different disease states.
Right, okay.
And the JNC8, the updated version of what we wrote in 2003, should be out within the next 9 months. But it's going to be a very different type of guideline than before. But I guess I would say that if you look at all of the guidelines around the world, not just here, but if you go to Canada, if you look at Europe, if you look at Australia, wherever you go, the message is all about, the focus is not on what kind of drug you use, it's about getting the blood pressure control.
Mm-hmm.
So given that the focus is on blood pressure control, I guess the message I would give is there's nothing magical about diuretics in terms of using them initially, and especially if you have patients with blood pressures that are 20 over 10 above the goal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we said in the JNC7 was that if your blood pressure is 160 or higher, then you really should be starting with two antihypertensive agents, not one.
Okay.
And even the JNC said that, and even all the other guidelines imply that. So having said that, what combination would you use? And I guess I'm arguing for the fact that we have evidence now that in the absence of spilling a lot of protein in the urine, if you start with an amlodipine-benazepril combination, you're going to be better off in the long run than starting with a diuretic combination. And the exceptions to that are people with advanced kidney disease. And I think with the exception of those groups, I think you can make a pretty good statement for the majority of people, not everybody. And the exception, of course, would be if you have edema, a lot of swelling or pre-existing or some other problem, then obviously you need a diuretic on board. And the truth is, at the end of the day, most of these patients with this level of disease are going to need three drugs, and mm-hmm. a diuretic, of course, will be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But where are you starting? You probably should think about the amlodipine-benazepril combo first before you start with the diuretic. That's really the only message.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. And, Dr. Bakris, I want to thank you so much for your time with us today.
Thank you.
You can reach Clinical Conversations at 1-617-440-4374. Or you can write to me, J-Elia, J-E-L-I-A, at jwatch.org. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for all news stories are also found. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adoriano, and I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, and thanks for listening.